All right, we're live. FOMC report came out. No change in the dot plot. No change in the interest rate. That's what we're, what so far, that is what we know. Let's quickly see how the markets are reacting. Right now, we have Bitcoin, 86,650. Remember, we're waiting to see today if there's a change in quantitative tightening. If the Fed decides to slow down or pause the quantitative tightening, which is my thesis as to what's going to happen today based on what I did the show earlier about. So that's what we're waiting for. Otherwise, right now, as you can see, altcoins, still green. Bitcoin, 86,500. Dot plot, unchanged. If you read here, 4 Fed officials expect no rate cuts in 2025 versus 1 in December. I think there's 12 Fed officials in total. Fed's median rate forecast, 3.9 versus 3.9 in the previous dot plot. Next year, 3.4 versus 3.4 in the dot plot. And then 3.1 versus 3.1 in the dot plot for 2027. The Fed's median forecast long run at 3% versus 3%. So absolutely no change in the dot plot. That is what's happening. We've got a big show for you tonight. Dylan's here. I'm here. We've got some other guests joining us today. We're going to go big here for FOMC. So if that sounds good to you, subscribe to the channel, smash the like button. Let's get the show on the road. Alrighty, we're here. And we're live, and we're bringing you the FOMC live, and Dylan's going to be trading the FOMC live. And if I know Dylan is going to be shorting the FOMC live, he's not buying long. Dylan, are you buying long or short in this FOMC? What are the charts telling you, Mr. Lord of Entry?
Looking to short any pumps. If we get some extreme pumps here, we're going to look at some hot zones to the upside. If we get some big, sharp sell-offs, we're going to look for the bounce. Keep it quite simple.
Can we turn up Dylan's sound a bit? He sounds a bit soft to him, my side. Maybe, how does he sound soft to you as well? All right, we're going to up your sound. All right, Dill, let's quickly look at the charts. Let's see what we've got here. So that's your chart. You got Bitcoin. What are you looking at there?
So here's BTC on the 2 hour. So this is the main one that I track because I trade, obviously, you know, during the week. I'll trade multiple times in the week. I'm not looking at just the bigger picture. So the one that I like to track is the 2 hour time frame. And you can see right now we've spent the whole day just grinding up into quite a big rejection zone. Yeah, we've rejected multiple times at this 84.6 and playing with the idea that we're going to get some kind of squeeze today, but no FOMO zone for me. 86,600, that type of region. We've got a big CME gap that could offer quite a big rejection for us up there. And alternatively, that 90K region looks pretty dangerous to me in terms of getting too bullish. So if we get moves into those zones, possible shorts in play there on any sharp pumps. And then downside, look, downside 73 to 70K is the big one that I'm watching. And it's going to have to be some filthy rejections, though, first at around 90, I would say.
All right, just give me 1 second. Finn Wales. All right, I'm getting some news here. This is what's going on here. So here is the news that's just come in. You can see that it says the Fed cuts GDP growth projection to 1.7 from 2.1% in December. So Fed is now pricing in slower growth. Fed raises unemployment forecast to 4.4 to 4.3. Fed raises PCE inflation from 2.7 from 2.5. Oh, not a pretty picture. They're painting a picture where we're going to have more unemployment, more inflation, and less growth. Or maybe that is a pretty picture. Maybe that's what we want to get the prices down. And that's what the market's actually giving us. That we see Bitcoin going up towards 85,000. Solana 131, ETH going up to 2000. Yeah, this is what's happening here. All right, let's carry on. If you guys want to follow the same news feed that I'm following, I'm literally just following the news feed here from Banter Bubbles. Literally, this is exactly what I'm following. You've got no surprise, FOMC rates partial QT announced. The Fed is now projecting lower GDP, higher unemployment, and higher inflation. Yet the dot plot is unchanged. Let's see what Jay Powell has in store for us today. All right, let's open that one. Also from the newsroom, Banter Bubbles newsroom. Guys, you can access this newsroom right here. Just go to the crypto. Just go to the newsroom and you guys will access the newsroom right here. The Fed sees higher inflation, a weaker economy breaking. The Fed makes multiple revisions to the economy. Basically, I think we've already covered that. 4 Fed officials expect no 2025 cuts versus 1 in December. Let's see. I think there's more coming. Gee, the stuff's coming in quickly. Fed to slow balance sheet runoff. Here's the big piece of information. To slow balance sheet runoff. So they are starting to loosen the quantitative tightening, which is quite big. That's actually quite big. Quantitative tightening, the Fed is loosening the quantitative tightening. So it means that they're going to take money out of the economy at a slower rate. That's bullish. That usually happens a little bit before quantitative easing. I think that it all comes down to Jay Powell and what Jay Powell is going to be doing today. Hold on. All right. There we go. Dylan, what are you seeing in the charts, sir?
Yeah, well, look, I mean, I think the big thing was this QT situation. Are they going to slow that down? So that's obviously a sign that we might be leaning to the upside. But in terms of the big stuff, what I'm seeing here on the bigger picture, and I don't want to paint like absolute doom and gloom here, but if this was, say, this is the weekly chart, but if this was a 15-minute chart and you looked at this thing, you would say the most obvious play here is something along these lines and then a little visit down to those types of areas. So that is kind of what I've been planning for, and we're going to be watching this 90 zone pretty closely. We're going to look for some kind of rejection up there, maybe to fake out just above, but I think we're going down before we go up.
I think up first but then down. I don't think Trump wants this market. I don't think Trump wants this market running.
Yeah, we pump into 90s, but I think people are going to get too euphoric and they're going to come and send it back down. So, people ask, where's the bottom? Where do I see it now? And for me, until we're pushing 73 to 70K, it's going to be difficult for me to say we're at the bottom.
All right. Virtual Bacon says the following. Our friend Dennis from Virtual Bacon, you all know him. I guess you all know him by now. He says, finally, a positive Fed balance sheet update from FOMC. Beginning in April, the committee will slow the pace of decline of its securities holding by reducing the monthly redemption cap from 25 to 5 billion. So they're pretty much ending QT. 5 billion is nothing, bro. 5 billion is the same as Dylan buys on a regular Wednesday afternoon. This is the final stretch before the Fed ends QT. The cap to the sales of the Fed balance sheet was 60 billion last May, then went down to 25 billion, and soon will be 5 billion. Signs are looking good for QT to end mid-year. So, that is what we have here.
That is kind of what they were saying originally. Didn't they say middle of the year? They were looking to end it.
That's exactly what he said. Okay, let's go. Hold on a second. Okay, I'm following the news. If you guys want to follow the same news that I'm following, all you need to do, go here to Banter Bubbles. Literally, you've got it all in front of you in the newsroom over here. You're getting at the same speed that I'm getting it. Okay, so that's the Virtual Bacon tweet that I was speaking about. Let us get a link to Jay Powell. So link to talk, please. Okay, now what we need to do, we need to obliterate the like button to make sure that we are the biggest channel in the world broadcasting the live FOMC. That is your objective now, ladies and gentlemen. I need you to smash the like button. I need you to share this with everyone. We need to be the biggest community in the world. So we've got Amit Kukreja, who's very good at stocks. He has got 1,500 people watching him. You've got Paul Barron with 2,200 people watching him. Let's see if we can be the biggest in the world. We've got to be the biggest in the world. Obliterate the like button. Let's get going. Let's go. All righty. There we go. Also, if you're not subscribed. I hear someone. Is that you, Dylan? Is that background noise coming from you? Or is that Nick?
Shouldn't be. There he is.
Background noise?
Nick, we hear you, sir. Now we hear you. Now we hear music as well.
Oh. Elevator music.
I don't think that's me.
Oh, I tell you, it's the Fed. It's the Fed's elevator music. It's the Fed. Nick, welcome, bro.
Right.
What do you think of the? What do you think of what's going on here, sir? Nick, I kind of hope this wasn't your music, bro. I didn't see you as like an elevator music man. Didn't see that at all.
Definitely not. I'm more rock. I'm into 70s rock, despite, you know, being a bit too young for that, but.
Okay.
You know, Rolling Stones, AC/DC.
Oh, wow.
That's more my
hardcore stuff, bro. AC/DC is hardcore stuff, bro.
Yeah, hardcore I love it. I was in London for the concert a few months ago. It was amazing. I always wear AC/DC shirts on my stream, but not today. Today I'm wearing a hoodie. But anyway, yeah. The news is kind of positive, but also negative. I mean, QT slowing down. I'm not so sure about that.
Well, it is.
They
pretty much said they're slowing down QT. They cut the repurchases from 25 to 5. That's a 80%. Well, not 80. It's a 75% cut. I mean, that's big.
Yeah, but it could be temporary.
It could be temporary, right?
They might be slowing it down just for... I can hear myself talking. It's annoying. I'm just going to mute our talk, I guess.
Oh, we're going to reduce the echo.
I was just going to say, I've muted, so I can't hear you, Ryan, just so I can't hear myself. I was going to say that it might just be a temporary slowdown because of the debt ceiling, right? So it might not be a permanent slowdown. So that's the only worry I have, that it might be a temporary pause and then they turn it back on.
I agree. Nick, we fixed your sound. You're not going to edit now. You're not going to echo now. You should not.
All right, awesome.
Okay, so yeah.
Yeah, I don't think I am. Cool.
There we go. So yeah, I do believe that it could be temporary, but you know what? They'll probably sort out the debt ceiling thing somewhere around June, July, August, right? Before the recess.
Yeah. Sure.
And then, I mean, by that time, it's a completely different picture, right? Like, you can't say it's hard to extrapolate what's happening now to what's happening at that time, which is quite crazy.
Yeah, yeah. It makes sense. So,
Ryan, in terms of what you're looking for, you happy with the upside push and you're still looking, where's your bottom? Where's your low?
70.
Oh, man. My 70? You think so?
70. 70 is my low.
No, there's a beautiful level at 51. Just saying.
51. Jesus. That's bleak, man. 51.
Quite bullish at 32.
I don't have a specific low. I don't like really making price projections, but I am thinking we'd probably get a turnaround in the next few weeks. It's not uncommon to get a turnaround kind of mid-March after a presidential election, the first March after a presidential election, getting a turnaround mid-March. Or early April. So that's kind of what I'm seeing happening. We're probably not yet, but I'm hoping for early April. But this is probably one of the bigger market dumps. We've seen on market corrections after presidential elections. So this one is a bit different to the last ones that we've seen. So,
yeah.
Maybe, I mean, 51.
I must say, I do feel that the S&P's got another leg down. That's the problem. And so I think that because the S&P's got another leg down, I don't think crypto will be spared. That's my base case. And the reason why I think the S&P's got another leg down is because I just don't think Trump's done any damage yet, to be honest. I think, markets are kind of down, but I mean, no one's panicking.
Not enough, hey guys. It feels like he's got to really send it. He's got to cause some proper damage down there.
Yeah, exactly. And that'll be another leg down. Anyway, I've got the NASDAQ open. I've got the Dixie open. I've got Bitcoin open. And we've got Powell open on this screen. So I think we're pretty ready for the day. We're all on 3 minutes. Let me just make sure they're all in a 3 minute time frame. Every week is important here, as Dylan will tell you. So AC/DC, man, huh? Well, what's your favorite AC/DC song, bro? Hardest is also an AC/DC, man. Hardest, what do you think? What's your favorite AC/DC song, Hardest?
Highway to Hell,
he says. Highway to Hell. Yeah, bro.
It's a hard one. It's a hard one to pick. I like.
I'm struggling to hear everything. Nick.
You're struggling to hear me.
You can sort this out.
Hold on, Hardest is sorting it out, bro. Hardest is sorting it out. I'll translate for you. Right now, Nick's telling us about his favorite AC/DC song.
I don't have a favorite. I don't really like favorite songs, to be honest.
Okay.
I'd say my favorite band overall is Rolling Stones, and I don't even have a favorite song from them. Maybe Paint It Black. Pretty depressing song.
Jeez.
But that's probably my favorite song of all time.
Someone said my things on the day. You know, I'm on 3 minutes. I'm watching all these weeks. Don't worry, chaps. I'm watching all these weeks. Let me just make sure that this is live, because this is like the money. So we're going to make sure that that's live. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to refresh. Have you fixed the sound? Can Dylan hear Nick?
Nick, say something.
Test.
Say something beautiful.
No, not yet. Not yet. Hardest is fixing it.
No.
Yeah, he's trying to figure out why it's not working. NASDAQ is up. Whoa, NASDAQ is up 100 points in the last 110 points. That's 0.5% since the NASDAQ liked this. Bitcoin liked. The NASDAQ liked this FOMC. Look at that.
Yeah. It's desperate to pump, though. Desperate. I mean,
they're looking for anything to pump. Hold on, I'm getting notes here from so many different news feeds. This isn't up only season, someone says. We're on the right track, but it's not up only season. Yeah, I think that's exactly it. We're on the right track, but it's not up only season. That's what it is. By the way, guys, if you want to follow Nick also does a show. Channel's called Lab of Crypto. It's the old lady of crypto channel. Go and check it out. Nick, you do a show every day, or what's the gig?
Few times per week. I've been off for a few weeks, so I'm coming back onto it. So two times per week. I was going to do a show tonight, but then you invited me here. Probably next one on Sunday.
Come follow me.
We
want to try and get this to be the biggest stream that's publishing the FOMC. So we've got to make sure we get the biggest stream in the market. Let's see how we're doing here. Hold on. You can see I'm learning how to play polo. So all my whole feed is like polo swings. Crazy shit. I committed to playing a tournament. I've never played polo before. And I've committed to playing in a tournament in April. Can you believe it?
Why polo? Out of all the sports, ballsy. Why'd you pick that one?
Because I got a friend in Dubai, and he's he plays polo, and he once invited me to go horse riding. I know how to horse ride very well. Like, I can ride. I used to be a show jumper, so I know how to ride very well. And then he said to me, he didn't really think I could ride. And then he put me on the horse. He realized I could ride. He was like, all right, you need to play polo. There's a tournament in 2 months or 3 months at the time. Now you're riding in it. And it's much harder than it looks. It's like playing golf on a horse.
You're 2 meters up. I mean, you're trying to hit a tiny ball with a two meters.
Someone says Meet Kevin has 17,000 people watching his stream. That is crazy stuff. Meet Kevin. Oh, no, it's Meet Kevin. Holy shit. 16,000. That's big. Guys, we've got some work to do. Obliterate the like button. Let's go. Come on. We've got work to do, people. Work to do. You know what you need to do. You know what you need to do. Let's see what's going on here. Can Dylan hear Nick yet?
I can't hear Nick. Test. But he's lovely to look at. I just can't hear what he has to say. Are you bullish at 51 or 32?
Nick can hear Dylan, by the way. Nick can hear Dylan. Yeah. It's just that Dylan can't hear Nick. I think it's a setting on your side. Is your output mic onto your headphones or something, bro? Like, oh, well, if you can hear me, obviously it can't be a setting on his side. Hardest. If you can hear me, then it can't. So, yeah, if he can hear me, surely he should be able to hear Nick, right?
Yes.
Okay, so we will have to work out what's going on. It's definitely here. Okay, let's see. Where is the stream? Let's see. Where is our stream? Okay. All right. Okay, Powell's back. Powell's back, ladies and gentlemen.
My colleagues and I remain squarely focused on achieving our dual mandate goals of maximum employment.
Can you pump the volume here, Hodges?
For the benefit of the American people. The economy is strong overall and has made significant progress toward our goals over the past 2 years. Labor market conditions are solid, and inflation has moved closer to our 2% longer-run goal, though it remains somewhat elevated. In support of our goals, today the Federal Open Market Committee decided to leave our policy interest rate unchanged. We also made the technical decision to slow the pace of decline in the size of our balance sheet. I'll have more to say about these decisions after briefly reviewing economic developments. Economic activity continued to expand at a solid pace in the fourth quarter of last year, with GDP rising at 2.3%. Recent indications, however, point to a moderation in consumer spending following the rapid growth seen over the second half of 2024. Surveys of households and businesses point to heightened uncertainty about the economic outlook.
That's good.
It remains to be seen how these developments might affect future spending and investment. In our summary of economic projections, the median participant projects GDP to rise 1.7% this year, somewhat lower than projected in December. Yep. And to rise a bit below 2% over the next 2 years. In the labor market, conditions remain solid. Payroll job gains averaged 200,000 per month over the past 3 months. The unemployment rate at 4.1% remains low and has held in a narrow range for the past year. The jobs-to-workers gap has held steady for several months. Wages are growing faster than inflation and at a more sustainable pace than earlier in the pandemic recovery. Overall, a wide set of indicators suggests that conditions in the labor market are broadly in balance. The labor market is not a source of significant inflationary pressures. The median projection for the unemployment rate in the SEP is 4.4% at the end of this year and 4.3% over the next 2 years. Inflation has eased significantly over the past 2 years, but remains somewhat elevated relative to our 2% longer-run goal. Estimates based on the Consumer Price Index and other data indicate that total PCE prices rose 2.5% over the 12 months ending in February and that excluding the volatile food and energy categories, core PCE prices rose 2.8%. Some near-term measures of inflation expectations have recently moved up. We see this in both market and survey-based measures. And survey respondents, both consumers and businesses, are mentioning tariffs as a driving factor. Beyond the next year or so, however, most measures of longer-term expectations remain consistent with our 2% inflation goal. The median projection in the SEP for total PCE inflation is 2.7% this year and 2.2% next year, a little higher than projected in December. In 2027, the median projection is at our 2% objective. Our monetary policy actions are guided by our dual mandate to promote maximum employment and stable prices for the American people. At today's meeting, the committee decided to maintain the target range for the federal funds rate at 4.25% to 4.5%. Looking ahead, the new administration is in the process of implementing significant policy changes in four distinct areas: trade, immigration, fiscal policy, and regulation. It is the net effect of these policy changes that will matter for the economy and for the path of monetary policy. While there have been recent developments in some of these areas, especially trade policy, uncertainty around the changes and their effects on the economic outlook is high. As we parse the incoming information, we're focused on separating the signal from the noise as the outlook evolves. As we say in our statement, in considering the extent and timing of additional adjustments to the target range for the federal funds rate, the committee will assess incoming data, the evolving outlook, and the balance of risks. We do not need to be in a hurry to adjust our policy stance, and we are well positioned to wait for greater clarity. In our SEP, FOMC participants wrote down their individual assessments of an appropriate path for the federal funds rate based on what each participant judges to be the most likely scenario going forward. An admittedly challenging exercise at this time in light of considerable uncertainty. The median participant projects that the appropriate level of the federal funds rate will be 3.9% at the end of this year and 3.4% at the end of next year, unchanged from December. While these individual forecasts are always subject to uncertainty, as I noted, uncertainty today is unusually elevated. And of course, these projections are not a committee plan or a decision. Policy is not on a preset course. As the economy evolves, we will adjust our policy stance in a manner that best promotes our maximum employment and price stability goals. If the economy remains strong and inflation does not continue to move sustainably toward 2%, we can maintain policy restraint for longer. If the labor market were to weaken unexpectedly or inflation were to fall more quickly than anticipated, we can ease policy accordingly. Our current policy stance is well positioned to deal with the risks and uncertainties that we face in pursuing both sides of our dual mandate. At today's meeting, we also decided to slow the pace of decline in our balance sheet. Since we began balance sheet runoff, our securities holdings have declined by more than $2 trillion. While market indicators continue to suggest that the quantity of reserves remains abundant, we have seen some signs of increased tightness in money markets. Beginning in April, the monthly cap on Treasury redemptions will be lowered from $25 billion to $5 billion. Consistent with the committee's intention to hold primarily Treasury securities in the longer run, we are leaving the cap on agency securities unchanged. This action has no implications for our intended stance of monetary policy and should not affect the size of our balance sheet over the medium term. The committee also continued its discussions as part of our five-year review of our monetary policy framework. At this meeting, we focused on labor market dynamics and our maximum employment goal. As we have indicated, our review will include outreach and public events involving a wide range of parties, including Fed Listens events around the country and a research conference in May. Throughout this process, we will be open to new ideas and critical feedback, and we will take on board lessons of the last 5 years in determining our findings. We intend to wrap up the review by late summer. The Fed has been assigned two goals for monetary policy: maximum employment and stable prices. We remain committed to supporting maximum employment, bringing inflation sustainably to our 2% goal, and keeping longer-term inflation expectations well anchored. Our success in delivering on these goals matters to all Americans. We understand that our actions affect communities, families, and businesses across the country. Everything we do is in service to our public mission. We at the Fed will do everything we can to achieve our maximum employment and price stability goals. Thank you. I will look forward to your questions.
All right, here we go.
Howard Schneider with Reuters. Thanks for your time. So two things on sort of the real side here, inflation and then GDP. How much of the higher inflation forecast for this year is due to tariffs? And since the policy path remains the same, are you effectively reading this as a one-time price level shock?
Okay, so how much of it is tariffs? So let me say that it is going to be very difficult to have a precise assessment of how much of inflation is coming from tariffs and from other, and that's already the case. You may have seen that goods inflation moved up pretty significantly in the first 2 months of the year. Trying to track that back to actual tariff increases, given what was tariffed and what was not, very, very challenging. So some of it, the answer is clearly some of it, a good part of it, is coming from tariffs. But we'll be working, and so will other forecasters, to try to find the best possible way to separate non-tariff inflation from tariff inflation. In terms of your looking through question,
smash the like button. It's
too
good.
Soon
just
to say about that. As I've mentioned, it can be the case that it's appropriate sometimes to look through inflation if it's going to go away quickly without action by us, if it's transitory, and that can be the case in the case of tariff inflation. I think that would depend on the tariff inflation moving through fairly quickly, and would depend critically as well on inflation expectations being well anchored, longer term inflation expectations being well anchored.
Well, I guess I'm looking at the out years here, and the fact that the policy path doesn't change at all and inflation is unchanged in the out years also, doesn't that imply you all have basically decided that there is no signal here and that it's just we're back to transitory again?
So I think that's kind of the base case, but as I said, we really can't know that. We're going to have to see how things actually work out. And the fact that there wasn't much change, I think that's partly because, you know, you see weaker growth but higher inflation. They kind of offset, and also, frankly, a little bit of inertia when it comes to changing something in this highly uncertain environment. You know, I think there's a level of inertia where you just say, maybe I'll stay where I am.
Thank you. Colby Smith with the New York Times. You just described inflation expectations as well anchored, but has your confidence in that assessment changed at all, given the increase in certain measures and the high degree of uncertainty expressed by businesses, households, and forecasters?
So on inflation expectations, of course, we do monitor inflation expectations very, very carefully, basically every source we can find, and short-term, long-term, households, businesses, forecasters, market-based. And I think the picture broadly is this. You do see increases widely in short-term inflation expectations, and people who fill out surveys and answer questionnaires are pointing to tariffs about that. If you look in the survey world, if you look a little further out, you really don't see much in the way of an increase. Longer-term inflation expectations are mostly well-anchored, if you look at the New York, for example. Then you have market-based, and it's the same pattern. People in markets are pricing in break-evens some higher inflation over the next year, must be related to tariffs, we know from the surveys. But if you
When I got into crypto, and I wasn't really much of a markets man, someone said to me, never bet against the Fed. And I didn't actually understand what they meant by never bet against the Fed. And then we got into COVID and the Fed printed money. And then I realized that when you just need to stay with the Fed. Now, what is he telling you? He's saying the Fed is maintaining its course. He's saying the Fed is not loosening and it's not tightening. And that kind of means that we're going to have sideways price action for a while.
Perhaps not the best indication of future spending, but I'm curious, what you think is behind this deterioration and to what extent it could be a leading indicator for hard data.
So let's start with the hard data. We do see pretty solid hard data still. So growth looks like it's maybe moderating a bit, consumer spending moderating a bit, but still at a solid pace. Unemployment's 4.1%. Job creation most recently has been at a healthy level. Inflation has started to move up now, we think partly in response to tariffs, and there may be a delay in further progress over the course of this year. So that's the hard data. Overall, it's a solid picture. The survey data, both household and businesses, show significant rise in uncertainty and significant concerns about downside risks. So how do we think about that? And that is the question. As I mentioned the other day, as you pointed out, the relationship between survey data and actual economic activity hasn't been very tight. There have been plenty of times where people are saying very downbeat things about the economy and then going out and buying a new car. But we don't know that will be the case here. We will be watching very carefully for signs of weakness in the real data. Of course we will. But, given where we are, we think our policy is in a good place to react to what comes, and we think that the right thing to do is to wait here for greater clarity about what the economy is doing.
Look at that. I mean, the Dixie's down. The Nasdaq's up.
Nick Timiraos of the Wall Street Journal. Chair Powell, Chair Greenspan once defined price stability as an environment in which inflation is so low and stable over time that it doesn't materially enter into the decisions of households and firms.
Can you say that today, that we have that price stability, that households and businesses are ignoring price growth? When you see buy in advance psychology, big changes in inventories, and surveys that show consumers, at least in the short run, expect higher inflation.
So I do like that definition a lot. In fact, I used it at the recent conference where I spoke. So I think a world where people can make their daily economic decisions in businesses and they're not having to think about the possibility of significantly high inflation. We know inflation will bounce around. That is price stability. You know, I think we were getting closer and closer to that. I wouldn't say we were at that. Inflation was running around 2.5% for some time. I do think with the arrival of the tariff inflation, further progress may be delayed. The SEP doesn't really show further downward progress on inflation this year, and that's really due to the tariffs coming in. So delayed, but if you look at our forecasts, we do see ourselves getting back into the low twos in 26 and then down to 2 by 27, of course, highly uncertain. So I see progress having been made toward that, and then progress in the future. I think that progress is probably delayed for the time being.
If that's the case, why are there cuts in the SEP for 2025?
So, again, people wrote down two cuts the last time, and they wrote down meaningful decline in growth from 2.1 to 1.7 in 2025, a tick up in the unemployment rate, so not much there, but core inflation up by 0.3. And so those kind of balance each other out. So people, not everybody, but on balance, people wrote down similar numbers. The changes aren't that big. The other factor, though, as I mentioned, is just really high uncertainty. What would you write down? I mean, it's really hard to know how this is going to work out. And again, we think our policy is in a good place. We think it's a good place where we can move in the direction where we need to. But in the meantime, it's really appropriate to wait for further clarity. And of course, you know, the costs of doing that, given that the economy is still solid, are very low.
Edward.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Edward Lawrence with Fox Business. So with near 4% unemployment rate, that should be low enough to bring people in from the sidelines in terms of hiring. But we're seeing the hiring rates have been stuck at 2023, 2024 levels. So what's going on there?
Yeah, so that's a feature has been for some time a feature of this labor market. You have pretty high participation accounting for aging. You've got wages that are consistent with 2% inflation, assuming that we're going to keep getting relatively high productivity.
So you've got, you can see you've got the stock bubbles. The stock bubbles are actually starting to look good. Shopify up 7.94%, Tesla up 4%, BA up 6.08%. So the stocks are actually moving up quite a bit.
You're not seeing people losing their jobs, but you're seeing the people who don't have a job having to wait longer and longer. And, you know, the question is, which way does that break? If we were to see a meaningful increase in layoffs, then that would probably translate fairly quickly into unemployment because people are, you know, it's not a big hiring market. We've been watching that, and it's just not in the data. It hasn't happened. What we've had is a low hiring situation, and it seems to be in balance now for the last 6, 7, 8 months. That's where we are. There's healthy levels of job creation too. So overall, it's a labor market that's in balance, and you know, we watch it very carefully.
So then, have we seen the new administration's policies in the economic numbers yet? And when do you anticipate that happening?
In labor or in other?
In labor and inflation, just across the economy, have we started to see the new policies take effect in the numbers?
Only in a kind of an early way. I mean, it's only been a few months, right? For example, the layoffs that are happening here are, you know, they're certainly meaningful to the people involved, and they may be meaningful to a particular neighborhood or region or area, but at the national level, they're not significant yet. But we don't know. We don't know how far that will go. We'll find out much more. I mentioned that you saw we've had two very strong goods inflation readings in the last 2 months, which is very unexpected. I think hard to trace it to specific tariffs, but it must have something to do with, it's either noise and it will come back, and that's very possible too. But if it is persistent, then it must be to do with, you know, people buying ahead of tariffs or raising prices ahead of tariffs and things like that. Those kinds of things happen, and they're very, very hard to capture because so much of it is indirect. A great example.
Every time I do an FOMC, the prices don't fucking move. I swear. And every time I don't, the prices fucking move.
Prices also went up on dryers, which were not tariffed. So the manufacturers just, you know, they just kind of followed the crowd and raised it. So things happen very indirectly. And so there'll be a lot of work done in coming months to try to trace all that through. But ultimately, though, it's too soon to be seeing significant effects in economic data.
Craig Torres from Bloomberg News. Thanks, Chair Powell. You said transitory price increases from tariffs are the base case. Transitory is the base case. Wasn't it the base case last time? And didn't the FOMC forecast lower inflation ahead last time? And wasn't the lesson that it quickly got into services, haircuts, daycare, everything else? And so I'm just wondering why the nine aren't taking that on board and are cutting twice this year.
When you say last time, are you talking about the last
pandemic? Yes, during the pandemic.
You could have been talking about the last time there were tariffs, in which case the inflation was transitory. Yeah, no, of course we're well aware of that, and it's still the truth. If there's an inflationary impulse that's going to go away on its own, it's not the right policy to tighten policy, because by the time you have your effect, you're in effect by design, you are lowering economic activity and employment. And if that's not necessary, you don't want to do it. In real time, as we know, it's hard to make that judgment. So we're well aware of what happened, obviously, with the pandemic inflation. But I mean, we have to look at this as a different situation. There are differences and similarities. It's a different time. You know, we haven't had real price stability fully reestablished yet, and we have to keep that in mind. And we hear that people are very reluctant to take on to allow prices to go up. At the same time, we hear that businesses are intending to pass many of these prices through. So it's hard to say how this is going to work out.
Steve Leisman, CNBC. Thanks for taking my question, Mr. Chairman. The Bank of Canada, in its last policy statement, said monetary policy cannot offset the impacts of a trade war. What it can and must do is ensure that higher prices do not lead to ongoing inflation. I wonder if that kind of reflects your own sense of prioritization faced with higher prices and weaker growth, that the idea is you have to take care of inflation.
You know, so we have two goals, right? We have maximum employment and price stability, and we have to balance those. And, there can be situations in which they're in tension, right? And we have a provision in our consensus statement that says what we should do in that case. That's a very challenging situation for any central bank, and certainly for us. And so what we say that we'll do is we'll look how far each of those two goals is, each of those two measures is from its goal. And then we'll ask how long we think it might take to get back to the goal for each of them, and we'll make a judgment, because our tools work in one direction. We're either tightening or loosening. So it's a very challenging situation. Let me say, we don't have that situation right now. That's not where the economy is at all. It's also not where the forecast is. I don't know any mainstream forecasts that really show significant problems like that.
Well, just to follow up, yesterday the UCLA Anderson forecast said there's a high probability of a recession. Where do you stand on whether or not the slowdown you're seeing creates a higher probability or concern that you may have on recession? Thank you.
You know, there's always an unconditional probability, possibility of a recession. It might be broadly in the range of 1 in 4 at any time. If you look back through the years, there could be within 12 months a 1 in 4 chance of a recession. So the question is whether whether this current situation, those possibilities are elevated. I will say this. We don't make such a forecast. If you look at outside forecasts, forecasters have generally raised, a number of them have raised their possibility of a recession somewhat, but still at relatively moderate levels, you know, still in the region of the traditional, because they were extremely low. If you go back 2 months, people were saying that the likelihood of a recession was extremely low. So has moved up, but it's not high.
Chris.
Hi, thank you. Chris Rugaber at Associated Press. As you know, I guess last night, the President Trump fired two members of the Federal Trade Commission, an independent agency, and this could cause the kind of legal fight about the administration's power to fire independent people. If those firings stand, is that a threat to the Fed's independence? Could he do the same thing to the Fed board?
Come on.
So,
what a waste of
the question. I did answer that question in this very room some time ago, and I no desire to change that answer and have nothing new for you on that today.
Well, I just, okay, well, maybe I have another mulligan. as you know, I wanted to go back to the consumer sentiment, particularly the inflation expectations in the University of Michigan survey. In the summer of 2022, you cited the rise in the long-term inflation expectations in that index as the reason that you went big with a three-quarter point hike. So I know you've talked about all the different measures now, but you seem to not be placing the same weight on that. And so I'm just wondering, are you dismissing that, what we saw last week from the University of Michigan, or does that carry the same weight as it did in the past?
So I mentioned it back then, but in no way did I place a huge weight on it. I think that was a ex post story, but it wasn't the case. That was a preliminary reading, and so is this. And it's also, this is that Michigan, the one you're referring to, the longer term thing. You know, we look at it, and we don't dismiss data that we don't like. We force ourselves to look at it, but it is an outlier compared to market-based and compared to other survey-based assessments of longer run inflation expectations. So we got to keep that in mind. And I would just say we look at all of them, and that one's kind of an outlier. But you know, nonetheless, we take notice of it.
Michael McKee from Bloomberg Radio and Television. There is a worry on Wall Street that when you say you want to study the net effect of the fiscal policies we may see on the economy, that you would end up waiting too long and be behind the curve in responding to any downturn. How can you reassure people that you can spot a problem early enough unless you decide to be preemptive?
Yeah, look, we're aware of we're well aware of how things are going to evolve and the time frames and all that. And, you know, we will use our tools to foster achievement of our goals to the best we can. And, of course, we're going to try to be timely with that. For right now, the hard data are pretty solid. We are obviously aware of the soft sentiment data and high uncertainty, and we're watching that carefully, and we think it's a good time for us to wait for further clarity before we consider adjusting our policy stance.
Do you think it's going to be hard to get clarity in a government by tweet? I mean, do you have a feeling that at some
Bitcoin's
point
ready,
you actually will
six,
have a forecast you can
right.
trust?
Yes, I think we will. It's hard to say when that will be. You know, these decisions are going to be made, and they're going to be implemented, and then we'll know. At that point, we'll know what the decisions are, and we'll have to make assessments then about the implications for the economy. Those things will happen. A lot of them will happen over the course of, you know, in coming months, certainly over the course of this year, and we'll be adapting as we go.
Rachel.
Hi, Chair Powell. Rachel Siegel from The Washington Post. Thank you for taking our questions.
At the beginning, you were talking about separating the signal from the noise and tariff inflation from non-tariff inflation. Can you walk us through what that looked like over the last couple of months, if there were specifics from the January meeting to now that helped you make those distinctions?
So when we say separating the signal from the noise, that's just a way of saying that things are highly uncertain and that, you know, you're reading about developments. The news is full of developments of tariffs being put on and taken off and things like that. That's some of that is noise in the sense that it's not really telling you anything. You're trying to extract a signal from that. And the signal is what's going to be the effect on economic activity, on inflation, on employment, and all those things. So that's really when we say signal and noise. Sorry, the second thing was?
Or similarly for tariff inflation, non-tariff inflation, ways that you're making the distinction.
That's sort of a special case of that. The idea being, and I do think that the first 2 months of this year are a great example. You've got high readings for goods inflation after a string of readings that average close to zero, and you have to ask, it's coming during tariffs, but it's very hard to actually scientifically go back and match up those increases and say, yes, I can prove that that's from tariffs, but it kind of has to be to some extent. Plus noise, there can be idiosyncratic readings in various categories, which will shortly reverse, and that happens too, and that could be a big piece of it. You know, I think we'll know. In a couple of months, we'll know whether those were, you know, where that really was from, but that's another case where I think it's going to be very, very challenging to unpack the inflation that we see over the course of this year and be able to say with confidence how much of that came from inflation and how much of it, from tariffs and how much of it didn't. But that's what we'll be doing. We'll be doing that, and so will everybody else, and we'll all be trying very hard to make that assessment. And, you know, I'm sure we will make a lot of progress on that, and we already have, but it's going to be a challenge.
Do you have a sense yet as to what, in your mind, would make something cross from noise to a signal, what that threshold would look like?
You know, it would depend on what we're talking about. I mean, obviously, you're looking for direct evidence that particular pieces of inflation are or are clearly not caused by tariffs. For example, if something that was, you know, in the service sector that was far away from anything that's tariffed, you might think, okay, well, that is, like, frankly, housing services inflation, which by the way, has been behaving well, you know, which for some time was kind of our problem. Now it's slow, but it's definitely, you know, moving down in a very good way. It's more now with goods and to some extent with non-housing services inflation.
Thanks for taking our questions, Chair Powell. Kelly O'Grady, CBS News. So consumer sentiment has dipped dramatically, but you say the economy and the hard data is still solid. What is your message to consumers that clearly disagree and don't feel that strength? Because the hard data they're looking at is their grocery bill.
Okay, so a couple things. The grocery bill is about past inflation, really. There was inflation in 21, 2, and 3, and prices went up. The current level, it's not the change in prices. It's they're unhappy, and they're not wrong to be unhappy, that prices went up quite a bit, and they're paying a lot for those things. So I think that is the fundamental fact, and has been for a long time, a couple of years, why people are unhappy with the economy. It's not that the economy is not growing. It's not that inflation is really high. It's not that unemployment is high. It's none of those things. We have, you know, 4.1% unemployment. We've got 2% growth. And, you know, it's a pretty good economy. But people are unhappy because of the price level. And we completely understand and accept that.
And just to follow up, why are you still projecting 2 rate cuts this year if your own projections show inflation higher for longer? Does that mean you see a slowdown in economic growth as a real threat?
So I think if you, yeah, I mean, remember we came into this with, at the December meeting, the median was 2 cuts, the median was. And so you come in and you see, broadly speaking, weaker growth but higher inflation. And they kind of balance each other out. So you think, and unemployment is really, they're really only a 1/10 change. So it's there's just not a big change in the forecast. There really isn't. Modest, you know, meaningfully higher growth and meaningfully higher inflation, which call for different responses, right? So they cancel each other out, and people just said, okay, I'm going to stay here. But the second factor is it's so highly uncertain. Is just, you know, we're sitting here thinking, and we obviously are in touch with businesses and households all over the country. We have an extraordinary network of contacts that come in through the reserve banks and put in the beige book and also through contacts at the board. And we get all that, and we do understand that sentiment has fallen off pretty sharply, but economic activity has not yet. And so we're watching carefully. So I would tell people that the economy seems to be healthy. We understand that sentiment is quite negative at this time, and that probably has to do with turmoil at the beginning of an administration that's making big changes in areas of policy, and that's probably part of it. I do think the underlying unhappiness people have about the economy, though, is more about the price level.
Victoria.
Hi, Victoria Guida with Politico. I wanted to ask, first of all, if you could clarify. You were talking about how tariffs were a good
Don't
part
forget,
of the
Politico
uptick in the inflation forecast,
the
and I was just wondering.
Organization that was funded by USAID, which is that the attack that Elon made.
Anticipating some of the tariffs that might be coming on April 2nd. And then also, if you wouldn't mind, talking a little more about the balance sheet decision and what drove that. Did that have anything to do with expectations of how raising the debt ceiling might affect the reserve supply?
Yeah. So in the SEP, you'll see that there's not further progress on core inflation this year. We're kind of flatlining, going sideways. We don't ask people to write down how much of this is from tariffs and how much of it is not. But some of it is from tariffs. We know that tariffs are coming in. We know that they're probably already, all forecasters have tariff inflation affecting core PCE inflation, core CPI inflation this year, without exception. I'm not aware of an exception. So it's in there. I can't tell you how much of that it is. In terms of the balance sheet, I guess the way I'd say it is, it was the flows in and out of the TGA that got us thinking about it. But as we thought about it, we really came to the view that this was a good time to make the move that we made. And
That's quite bullish. She's saying it's not only because the TGA
came around to the view that we would do the same thing we'd already done, which is in June, we lowered the pace of QT, and we're just going to do that again. We're going to cut it roughly in half. And the sense of that is, if you're cutting the pace of QT roughly in half, then the runway is probably doubled. Okay, so it's going to be slower for longer. And people really like that. People thought that's a good idea. It's like a plane. You can think of it like a plane coming in for a landing. As we get closer, and we still think that reserves are abundant, although you begin to see some of the things we look at begin to react a little bit, but we still think that they're abundant. Now, of course, now the TGA is emptying out, so reserves are higher now, so you can't really see the underlying signal. So we came around to the view, and it had a lot of appeal, and so we did it. It has no implications at all for monetary policy. It has no implications at all for the ultimate size of the balance sheet. It isn't sending a signal in any hidden way that you can try to tease out. It's just not there. We're basically, it's very consistent with our plans and our practices that we've published and that we followed since we began this, what is a very successful, rundown of the balance sheet. Again, the second time that we've slowed the pace, and we've said that we would stop when we were somewhat above the level we judge as ample. And clearly we're not at that level yet, but we're going to be approaching it more slowly. It's a common sense kind of a thing, and it had pretty broad appeal, I will say.
Claire.
Claire Jones, Financial Times. You said in January, Chair Powell, that inflation expectations remained well anchored. Would you still say they remain well anchored today? And just to reiterate the question others have asked, if they're not so well anchored, why hasn't there been a more radical shift to the policy path today? Thank you.
So when we talk about inflation expectations being well anchored, we're talking about longer run inflation expectations. And they really haven't moved much, I mean, if at all. There's one reading that everyone's focusing on that's higher, but the other survey readings and the market-based readings all show relatively, well-anchored inflation expectations. You would expect that expectations of inflation over the course of a year would move around because conditions change. And in this case, we have tariffs coming in. We don't know how big, there's so many things we don't know, but we kind of know there are going to be tariffs, and they tend to bring growth down. They tend to bring inflation up in the first instance. So I would say, you know, I'm not dismissing what we're seeing in short-term inflation expectations. We, as I mentioned, follow that very carefully. But when we say expectations are well anchored, we're really looking at, you know, longer terms, 5 year and out. And there's really no story to tell 5 years and out, either in market-based or in surveys. But we'll watch it. I mean, we're not going to miss any evidence that longer-term or medium-term inflation expectations are moving.
Neil. Hi, Chair Powell. Neil Irwin with Axios. Treasury Secretary Bessent has observed that a large share of job growth over the last couple of years has been in what he calls government or government-adjacent sectors, healthcare, education. Do you agree that there's some weakness in underlying private job growth, and do you see the composition of job growth as something that has policy implications?
So that has been the case. We talked about that over the course of the last year. There were some good number of months and times when a lot of the job creation was concentrated in, you know, educational institutions, healthcare, state governments, things like that. There were also times when private sector job growth has been moving in a healthy range. I mean, they're all jobs, but and remember, we're
Nick, we're just send me this. Maybe this is why crypto is running, because President Trump is reportedly expected to make a major update to his upcoming crypto strategy. What do you think that could be, Nick? What are you speculating here, sir?
I've got no idea. I just sent this on my Discord. I've got no idea what it could possibly be.
But the whale flip.
I'm not expecting it to be anything crazy.
You know what I think it is? I think he's going to make an announcement that he's putting Barron in charge of a Twitter, not Eric. I think that's big crypto announcement. Barron's going to start running the Twitter, not Eric. I mean, no jokes.
Maybe we'll get good signals.
I've heard this a few times today, by the way. It's come on the newsroom a few times today. If you look here, let me show you. It's actually come out of here. There we go. So this is, I mean, I've muted Powell for now because I think he's been getting a bit boring now. So if you look at the newsroom here, it's come out a few times over here. It came out, hold on, I saw it on the way to, I saw, here we go. Came out here, 18 minutes ago, came out from Chris, from one of the researchers. And I think it came out way earlier also. So maybe that's why the market's actually moving. As it relates to Bitcoin, 86 almost, 85,800. Dylan, what, any views, sir?
So... yeah, I mean, what we do know about this whale, he's the same whale that was longing and shorting when Trump was announcing the strategic reserve.
You're right.
An hour ago, okay, or whatever. But now he's flipped long. So, yeah, maybe he knows something's coming.
Oh, wow. Okay, I didn't actually make that.
The same guy.
But wasn't Zach saying that this guy is just a criminal who's playing with laundered money? Well, not launder money, sorry. He's trying to launder money.
Well, the guy knows something. He knew who randomly longs 200 or 300 million on a Saturday afternoon, like on the bog or whatever he was doing. You know what I mean? Like, who does that?
So, and then again, before this comes out.
You reckon he was on the bog, Dylan?
I don't know. It's a Saturday. I don't know. Maybe he was on the couch. Who knows?
I don't know if he's on the bog, bro.
Could have been.
It's a good point.
Let's see if Paul's
saying. But he wants us to know, right?
Yes, I think it's all public. He wants us to know, right?
And sorry, standing here today, would you?
Yeah, I think to be honest, I think we're getting into that point in the press conference where nothing's going to change. Yeah, so again, just going back to it, I'm not sure he was on the bog, but I mean, he did open a very big long.
Could have been.
Yeah.
Look, my view, I mean, I didn't see anything incredibly bullish out of this thing. We didn't see major pumps in the price and anything too exciting. I know you more of an economist than I am, so I'm keen to hear what your take is on this thing.
I'll take an $86,000 Bitcoin relative to where we were at 80,000 this morning, guys. Let's just go back to, like, this morning we were at 80,000. You know, like, we were looking bearish as fuck. Now we are on 87,000, 86,000. I'll take it. I mean, it's not the best FOMC. And as I said, I think I'm jinxed because I've done every single FOMC, and they've all done been nothing burgers. And the one that I didn't do was the one that fucking pumped, and I swore I'd never do it anymore.
I remember.
I'm worried about what they're saying. So they're saying unemployment edging up. And I remember in 2007, Ben Bernanke, because I was trading back then in 2007, he said the same stuff. And whenever I hear the Fed chairman saying unemployment edging up, I start to freak out, because back then it was just before the, you know, the Great Recession. So unemployment edging up, inflation rising, slowing growth, that's stagflation if it persists. And that starts to worry me. Like, are we heading into another recession?
It doesn't sound good, but actually what you want is you want the Fed to think or to say that things don't sound good, because that's the only time that they're going to act, right? So like the Fed ain't going to act unless they think, you know, if everything's going well and jobs are getting stronger and then why does the Fed need to act? The Fed doesn't need to act. If they starting, like, you want them to forecast recession, you want them to forecast huge unemployment, you want them to forecast no inflation, stagflation. That's what you want them to forecast. Like that, think about it like that. So I think like, bad news is good news, QE. To be honest. QE, bro. I mean, it's bad, because we're literally cheering for the other team. We're like sitting here going, yeah, bro, we want bad economy, bro. We want more people to not have jobs, bro. Crypto bros want everybody not to have jobs.
I would love a recession, personally. I made a lot of money in the 2008 recession. I'd love another shot now that I know a lot more than I did back then.
Nick, how did you make your cash, bro? How did you? I know you're a multi-gazillionaire. I know that, because only a multi-gazillionaire can have a background like that. How did you make your cash, bro?
My biggest ever year for a long ass time was 2008. Was
2008, you
know, the recession. Yeah, like I was trading Forex back then, a bit of stocks, and the Forex market got really, really crazy, really volatile during the recession, and it was like easy to make money then if you had an idea what you were doing. But then it was crypto after that. I mean, 2017, I completely screwed it up. I just messed up really, really bad. I held on. I thought crypto was the future. It was just going to keep going. I lost everything. Well, not everything.
Oh man, he lost everything. We just lost him. I mean,
he was about to tell us how much XRP he bought in 2017.
Fuck, and then we lost him. I mean, what a time to lose him! What a time to lose him, bro! What a time to lose him! Wait, why have I not got any volume now? Let's get some volume in here. See if Paul's saying anything.
Said, while the unemployment rate has remained very consistent with full employment, 4.1%. So we now have inflation coming in from an exogenous source, but the underlying inflationary picture before that was, you know, basically 2.5% inflation, I would say, and 2% growth and 4% unemployment. So that's what we did. That's what together the economy accomplished. So I don't see any reason to think that we're looking at
listen, Paul's getting a little bit boring. You can see Bitcoin, 85,600. You can see the NASDAQ. NASDAQ is up a little bit. It's above 20,000 on the futures. This is, I'm looking at NASDAQ E-mini futures. Oh, Nick's back. No, yeah, he left us with a cliffhanger. Bro, you left us with a cliffhanger. Again. He doesn't want to tell us how much he's made his money. That's what's going on here. Guys,
2017.
I have a few small announcements. All small announcements. Number one, if you are a whale, like a whale, right? We managed to get you guys like amazing deals. And the first deal we managed to get you guys, if you sign up to Blowfin and you deposit 40 grand, you get $5,000 in futures bonus. 75 grand, you get $10,000. $10,000, you get $10,000, you get $1,200. So if you deposit $10,000, you get $1,200 as a futures bonus. You can trade the $1,200 and then just withdraw your $10,000. That's available on Blowfin. There is a link below. This is like the whale deals that we've been organizing for you guys. So if you want it, go and get it tonight. Go and get it. Nick, all right, so bro. So 2017, you said you messed it up, bro. Hello, we can't hear Nick. I can hear him breathing, but he can't hear me hardest. Nick, can you hear me, sir? Oh, man, now we lost him again. We lost him again. Okay, we lost Nick. Let's see what's going on here. Powell's not really saying much because you can actually see what he's saying by
when we actually know the specifics, we'll be able to have still uncertain but better informed forecasts. So yes, that's in there.
Last question goes to Jean.
Last question, people.
Hi, Chair Powell. Jean Young with M&I Market News. Had a couple questions on the balance sheet change that you made. So the minutes had initially described your discussion on slowing QT as temporary until the debt ceiling is resolved. But it, from what you said earlier, doesn't sound like there's a desire to kind of regain the pace of QT that we have at the moment after the debt ceiling is resolved.
Good question.
Is that the case?
Yeah, so we looked at pausing and we looked at slowing, and really people came together very strongly behind slowing, not pausing, for a variety of reasons. And so people really came to be, pretty strongly in favor of this move.
Good
slows
question.
Down the path and
good
probably
question.
Lengthens it, doubles it effectively by slowing the by half. That people thought that's a good place to be. It'll help us assure that this path is a smooth one as we get closer and closer to that. So that's how that came about.
Well, I guess my question is more, was that meant to be a temporary measure during the debt ceiling episode, or?
It was the TGA flows, Treasury General Account flows, that got us thinking about this. But the more we thought about it, we came around to this.
The original discussion was provoked by that, but
I think what we came up with, though, was broader than that and different than that. It does address that issue.
Nick, I'm much more interested in your 2017. So you round-tripped XRP?
And Cardano.
I don't know. It looks like he can't hear us, or he doesn't want to answer the question.
Am I back now?
You're back. Can you hear me, Nick? Can you hear me, sir? I can hear you.
I can't hear him.
I can hear him. I can hear him, but I can't. He can't hear me. Hardest, he can't hear me, sir. You need to make Nick hear me. Nick can't hear me. Damn, man. I really want to know how Nick made his money in 2017. I'm dying to know. The Fed FOMC has now ended. What we will do is we will wait for Nick to tell us how he made his money. Nick, can you hear me, sir? Dylan, how did you make your money, sir?
Getting wrecked on XRP in 2017.
Ah, come on, bro. Come on, bro.
I had another life before crypto. I had a few other things going on. But XRP was one of them.
Bro, is it true that you owned a sex shop?
That's correct. No. Fuck, what is that?
I don't know. I heard a rumor. It was on one of the chats that I'm on. They said before Dylan joined Banty, he owned a sex shop. I was wondering.
Categorically, no. I didn't.
Okay. Maybe they were just a tenant in one of your buildings.
That's possible.
Can we hear Nick yet? Nick, can you hear me, bro? Ahoy, Nick. Nick. Oh, man. All right, chaps. I think if we can't hear each other, maybe it's a sign from the Lords. We shall see you guys again tomorrow, regular programming. Until then, we will wonder what Nick does for a living.